He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
And this is indeed me. I don't have my co-host, Jada Markin, with us for this week's show, mainly because he is in Europe, and I hope he's gathering some interesting things to talk about for those who like to think about international car things going on in the European car sales. I'll just add that I think that Europe is probably a few steps ahead of the U.S. in terms of legislation promoting the coming electric car era. We've got several countries that are giving major incentives to buy or transform their country people, car buyers, into electric vehicles far more quickly than it's happening here in the United States. I must say that this has never surprised me. Europe has often been ahead of us in a lot of things, I mean, in the automotive field. Technology advancements have been promoted more quickly in Europe, especially relating to car lighting, and that is, I'm talking about headlights. They have headlights, and we do too here to a certain extent, that actually turn with the steering wheel of a car and aim their lights in advance of the car going around a curve, and they're allowed to do so. They also, Audi had a very advanced lighting system in many of their lines of vehicles, starting with the real luxury levels and coming downward, which they still are producing cars with computer programs that can adjust headlighting situations on their vehicles. They have not been allowed to institute those electronic controls over the headlights systems that come on the cars coming to the United States, although I suspect that the headlights are ready to be turned on, so to speak, if our laws would allow them to activate the systems that are available in the Audi lines. I suppose that BMW and Mercedes and others are not far behind, and they may even have the same systems available in their car lighting systems, but I've only read about the Audis. But back to the European situation with electric cars. The Scandinavian countries are probably ahead of Europe the way in a proportional sense that they are smaller, but they are far more advanced in their thinking about getting electric cars on their roads more quickly than either Europe and or definitely the United States. Jay, maybe we can talk about that, and we will stop talking about that part right now. I'd want to go to the Carvana situation. Anybody who's been listening to this show on a weekly basis or in a regular basis would know that I have purchased a vehicle through Carvana back in May or June of this year.
Was it that long ago?
What?
Was it that long
ago? It wasn't that long ago. I am very happy with it. Since then, a couple of things are happening. I will be at a Carvana car delivery tomorrow morning. That's Tuesday in the week of this particular show's public, airing, to go over a Carvana purchase by some friends of mine, who I talked into looking at the Carvana process, and they found a car and they're having it delivered. But I want to be there because I think I know enough to help them make sure that they have a happy experience. And the reason I say happy experience is because I am sure that there are people around who have purchased Carvana Pro cars, as there are around people who purchase at any dealership, that are unhappy. My wife recently ran into another local citizen of our broadcast area and found out that she had purchased a car from Carvana, and her comment to my wife was, she will never purchase a car from Carvana again. Now, that's a pretty strong statement, and I have not talked to this party, and I don't know whether I will or not, to find out what this party was complaining about the experience and or the car. But I think that one needs to. My experience has shown that it really helps if you go through the Carvana experience, and I'll try to be somewhat brief, that you know something about the car you're purchasing, either because you've already owned a car like it, as therefore you know the car's inherent characteristics, or you just know in general about looking over vehicles that are not new, that may have anywhere from 15 to 45,000 miles on them, which is what I seem to see in the Carvana car assortments when I look through the Carvana website. And therefore can have a variety of things that may show up after, long after, or maybe shortly after, you've run out of the Carvana
warranties. The reason I'm mentioning this is just something that people need to be aware of in terms of the Carvana owner.
That is correct.
It's Garcia. And just this is past history, but sometimes past is prologue. And Mr. Garcia, the owner of Carvana, pleaded guilty to bank fraud in 1990. So what was that, 30 years ago? For his roles, his small roles in the demise of, and I don't remember if you recall this, Robin, the California Thrift Lincoln Savings and Loan.
Oh, was he connected to that?
Yep.
Okay.
And he pled guilty to his roles in that. And that Lincoln Savings
and Loan.
And now,
is he head of Carvana now? I don't know.
He owns it. It's his.
He owns it. So that's an interesting assortment, but I'd like to stick to the car part if we can at the moment. And we can discuss that later.
Right. No, it's just to be aware of in terms of the company, not the
right.
car.
Well, Carvana puts themselves out to the public as being very responsible sellers of used vehicles. They claim they get 15,000 new vehicles a month, new used vehicles a month to put on in their dispensing machines and or lots all around the country where they have their sales or their remake their do-over repair centers for their vehicles. And I don't know whether it's 15,000 a month or not, with the shortage of really good vehicles, new and used, available on the market. I don't know how they find 15,000. But in any event, back to what I was starting to get at. My vehicle, as I have said, on the earlier shows, came with two or three things that I spotted, or my wife spotted, and under the warranty program, were quickly and effectively and painlessly fixed without any charge to me. But I don't know how many people who buy these cars will have seen what I found on my vehicle until it might have been too late. And the until I might have been too, it might have been too late is the key phrase here, because you have three levels of satisfaction of warranty type of situations to give you a satisfying experience or not, which you have to really pay attention to. The first one is at the delivery, which will be tomorrow for this friend of mine, and they will have a 15-minute test ride, which is no time frame at all, allowing you to find anything really wrong with the car. It's just to give you an idea that what you purchase appears to be what you want to get. And that is, it'll drive well, and you'll go on a 15-minute drive, as I did in my Jeep when it got delivered. And I went out. State Road, and came back on town roads with varying surfaces, which don't really tell you anything, because the cars generally, unless they have a really bad suspension problem, are going to ride almost like new. And so you're pretty much. I had the choice of either putting it back in the truck and saying I don't want this car, or I would go to the next level, which I have said on an earlier show, comes to a one-week test drive with 500 miles of gratis mileage without paying for it, to see if the car does a lot, you know, continues to go along what the 15-minute drive told me, showed me. And then after that, you really make the plunge to buy or not buy the car after the one-week test drive is finished. And you can either turn the car back in, I think for a refund, or certainly for a swap with a like-kind vehicle or like-kind cost or whatever. And after that, after you've accepted from the 500-mile, one-week test drive, you are now into the purchase of the car. You've committed to the purchase of the car, but you do have 4,000-plus miles. It's 4,200, I think, or 4,150, something like that, or 100 days. That is better than most new car, used car warranties that you get in most of the states around that I know of. You normally get maybe 30 days or 3,000 miles or something of a warranty on a used car. The laws may be different in different states, so anybody listening should not take this as gospel. But the Carvana warranty is gospel to the point that you have 100 days or 4,200 miles of driving to pick up on things that might be wrong with your car, excepting, that is excluding, wear and tear items. Wear and tear items are wiper blades, brakes, most other assorted things having to do with tires, for example, you would pay for after they wore out. some cars will come with remaining powertrain warranties. My Jeep came with a remaining powertrain warranty of, even though it's 3 years old or 2.5 years old, two active years old, I think I've got 9 months or 50,000 miles for the powertrain warranty. And that's a Chrysler warranty. That's a Jeep warranty. That's not a Carvana warranty. But that's the only warranty that might exceed the type of warranty that might exceed the Carvana 4,200-mile, 100-day warranty. So if you know these things, you need to follow the dates and the mileage situation pretty carefully if you want to try to get Carvana to rectify any problems that might show up in the car. And I can't tell you what that list includes or excludes. You just have to pay attention to the Carvana representations. So that's it for Carvana this week. I will report on the delivery of the vehicle in a succeeding show, and we'll see how the people who get this car are how satisfied they are with the experience that they're about to go through. And I have schooled them in these three levels of Carvana satisfaction programs, so they're ready to roll with their pending purchase. I want to move on to hot SUVs, or even hot small cars. This is a growing segment of the American manufacturers and the European manufacturers and even the Asian manufacturers of vehicles. And by hot SUVs or hot small vehicles, I'm talking about cars that have generally standard engines that are not turbocharged or not supercharged, put out adequate amounts of horsepower, and probably drive more or less satisfactorily. And then there are upgraded levels of engines that are supercharged, turbocharged, or have high power outputs that transform these vehicles into highly satisfying, drivable vehicles for those who get excited about driving cars. And I suspect that the general public that listens to this show and drives cars does not actively seek the performance idea or the performance level of cars being more fun to get hold of and own than just getting a car to drive from point A to point C or D, B as they go along in their lives. The Cherokee was one of the first vehicles that I discovered put in a very high performance four-cylinder upgraded engine over the standard 75 horsepower four-cylinder engine that came on my very first Cherokee, which was a 2015, and they didn't have anything but that or a V6 engine. In 2019, they added a turbocharged 271 horsepower engine four-cylinder, which I leased in a subsequent year model, a 2019 model, and fell in love with practically instantly upon the test drive. And I have talked about this vehicle, this engine, and Cherokees, in several shows over the years. I recently, my Carvana Jeep, which I got in place of the turn-back lease vehicle, has a turbocharged engine. That was one of the things I demanded when I looked for a replacement Cherokee for the lease that I turned back. And now I have since then test-driven, or I had as a loaner, a Q3 Audi, which is a slightly smaller SUV version, equivalent to the Jeep Cherokee. And it, too, has a very spirited engine. I will use that word spirited as it is meant to be. By spirited, I mean in any car with a good spirited engine, good acceleration from stop, excellent acceleration for passing requirements or getting on to interstates and getting back onto limited access highways after you've gotten gas and you've got to try to get yourself back into a line of traffic which may be clogging the roads and making it very hard to get back on. And you need spirited engines, and you need to use the spirit of these spirited engines to get yourself adequately, safely back into a line of traffic on an interstate highway where traffic may be passing by your stopped position at speeds between 50 miles an hour and up. And I watch people trying to get on, and they don't know what they can do with their vehicles, and they sit and they sit and they sit, and they cannot get themselves to dare to get back into the traffic lane because they're worried about these cars going whizzing by at 50 to 75 miles an hour. And this is where these spirited engines make a big difference in a satisfaction level of ownership of a smaller car, or any car, actually. I mean, they've got spirited engines all the way up through the million-dollar vehicles, but I'm talking about cars that have base three-cylinder and four-cylinder engines, which, if they're not turbocharged or supercharged, are not particularly exciting or actively able to get accelerate and pass vehicles and or get onto vehicles, highways, in a safe manner. Plus, if you have a car with one of these good engines, they are much more pleasurable to drive if you are an active driver, meaning you pay attention to the kind of driving characteristics that your car has, and you appreciate cars that perform in a more spirited manner than many base level cars. There are increasing numbers of these vehicles that are showing up. I mentioned the Q3 and the Audi line. I know the BMWs have an equivalent vehicle, engines in some of their vehicles. The Ford Explorer has a very high-performance version of itself. Police have a lot of Explorers, and they have police interceptor levels of Ford Explorers, which I do not know how much the engines are increased over the current engines that the public can buy, but I suspect they're very similar. And pickups trucks are also, we've talked about the Ford Raptor, which has a very high-performance engine. The Dodge Ram has got a very high-performance level of their Ram pickups. And Chevrolet is not far behind, but it's a little further behind than Ford or Dodge at this juncture, production, and I'm not sure what they have in their Silverado series, that's the equivalent of the Ram and the Ford Raptor level of vehicles. But driving is becoming more important to me as I watch us convert to electric vehicles, because the electric vehicles all outperform most of the regular fossil fuel vehicles on acceleration and passing capabilities, because electric engines have different characteristics, and you don't need necessarily a bigger electric motor to do what a small electric motor can do. But it's interesting to watch as we go forward how some of the manufacturers of continuing to manufacture fossil fuel engines are trying to make their vehicles perform more sprightly, without telling us we have to go to electric lines of vehicles if we're a driver and driver is sensitive about that kind of thing. Where do I want to go next? Oh, I want to go to front grills on cars. I've talked in the past about my feelings about when I go and buy a car, its looks, its exterior looks. And for a long time, we've had a lot of vehicles as miles per gallon ratings had to go up. They all became sort of looking very similar in their shapes. The fastback roof lines of the sedans all made them look a lot alike, and they still do. The electric cars, in a lot of ways, the Teslas, for example, all have a very streamlined look. And while Tesla has a unique look, and you can spot a Tesla a long ways away, front and rear, if you're doing that kind of thing, as I do, you have not been able to necessarily tell the difference between a Chevy Malibu and a Ford Fusion, for example, or a Hyundai Sonata, which are all mid-level sedans that all became a lot of look-alike situations, other than the front grills, the bow tie badges on the Chevys, and other minor tweaks to try to make them look a little different and noticeable from the outside by people coming down the road looking at cars. Pickup trucks are going one step better, and the Toyota Tundra is about to release its newly designed 2022 Tundra pickup. And my first picture of it came across my emails the other day, and I said to myself, it looks ghastly. Now, that's not a very positive statement to say about a pickup truck front, but pickup trucks need to look very masculine, in my point of view. And the ones with the Ford used to have some older pickups that didn't look particularly tough. Pickup truck grills and front ends make the trucks look tough, and that's what the majority of owners like about the looks of their pickup trucks. And Chevy has done quite a good job, and GM with their Chevrolet and GMC lines of pickup trucks recently. So has Ford, and Toyota has been a little bit behind. But I think that the new Toyota pickup front end is so radically different than the existing one. I'm not sure. It reminds me of what Lexus did to their front ends about 4 years ago with some of their lines. They made such a big grill, you really almost couldn't see the sheet metal above it. And the picture I'm looking at of the Toyota Tundra is definitely makes it look like almost like a tractor, the big tractor front ends of some of these tractor-trailer trucks that run around on our highways and haul the goods. So you pickup truck listeners, if you're listening, get ready to see the new Tundra front end. And if you like it, you're going to buy it. And if you don't, you won't. Enough on that.
And enough on this. So thank you very much. He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.